And welcome to another episode of the Oliver Shearer Show. Here's your host, Oliver Shearer. Today, I'm sitting again virtually with someone, and this time it's Arada Patel, another friend from my retreat in Samodiva last year in Bulgaria. When I look at her profile on LinkedIn, she calls herself a health and fitness professional with a master's degree focused in pharmacy. She lives in Wales and is passionate about creating real and lasting change in the lives of others through education and training. Welcome, Arada.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's so lovely to see you and speak to you virtually from across the oceans.
Yeah, I'm in Denmark and you're on another island, not too far.
I am, yes. I'm sitting on a mountain in the middle of Wales.
Yeah, I wished we had mountains on this island, but...
Sorry, we've got plenty here for everyone. After all of this is done, you can come and take a visit and a walk in nature here.
Yes, I would love it. We planned to come last year. So, but we know we have less than 40 minutes because you have a webinar coming up. So let's see how much we can handle today of my famous questions.
Looking forward to it.
Yes, and I'm really grateful that we finally managed to have a longer interview.
Definitely.
So, I just introduced you very shortly, but if you would have three things to describe you, it could be privately or professionally, who would you be with these three things?
What a question. Very good. Three things. So when you ask that question, I think it comes back to what are the three things that have really become sort of the core of who I am. And the first thing that comes to my mind totally clearly is my sort of connection with nature and spirituality. From a very young age, I've always been very sort of connected and in touch to something greater than just us in our bubble, but being part of something bigger. So for me, just the sort of daily activity of meditation, lighting a candle, and sort of starting with gratitude of knowing that I'm here for something bigger than just getting up and going to work every day, and knowing that that's part of a bigger plan. So I'd say my spirituality and that core of who I am, and who I am when I sit down in front of that lighted candle, really, that is a big part of me, really, from the core. Second thing is learning and education. And you mentioned it there in the introduction, but that has been something I've been hungry for knowledge for as long as I can remember, and devour books at the speed of knots, and have absolutely been passionate about education for both myself, but also using it as a functional way to communicate to other people. So my university training and my studies outside of university as well have been really helpful for me and allowed me to learn a lot more about myself. But I found that my greatest love was actually in not just learning almost selfishly for as a self-indulgence and for enjoyment, but learning with the goal of how can I share this and make it functional, make it something that can help transform other people. So that is a lifelong endeavor. I don't think we're ever there in our goals of who we wish to be, but it's just a continuous growth, really. But yeah, I'd say learning and education is huge. And in particular for me, that's been very focused around neuroscience, around studying the brain, human behavior, and how we can really use the daily activities to help create transformation on a biological level as well as on a psychological level. And probably the last thing, it's a toughie. Can I say chocolate?
Chocolate.
I feel like that's a really important part of who I am as well. And actually, it's really important for me to say that, because one thing that I find really difficult is people that aren't authentic. And I'm authentically honest about the fact that we are all human beings and no one is perfect. Chocolate is a very important part of my life, and allowing myself to have little indulgences, to sit and have a cup of tea in front of the fire and some lovely chocolate and relax, actually has been something that I'm learning more about now. I've always very, very much my own worst critic. And the last year has taught me a huge amount about taking guilt-free time to nourish myself with healthy treats as well as the occasional and unhealthy ones as well. and just allowing in this very sort of fast-paced and very high-achieving world that we all give ourselves time to nourish ourselves in ways where we don't feel guilty about it, but we see it as part of us being able to give better to people because we've started working from the inside out.
Wow, that's an introduction. Now, and we only have
a little bit longer than you were thinking.
No.
2 minutes left.
Yeah, I could just ask you questions for another 2 hours now with all of what you laid down on top of the talks we had before. So I'm adding this. Now you said chocolate. It's very important. I'm changing a bit one of my questions, and you get the original as well. What kind of chocolate would you be if you would be the new one in the shop, which is exposed there? And why, you know, what is the flavor? What, your creativity.
Okay. So for me, I think it's got to be a dark chocolate with sea salt and caramel. And that is, I'd say, if you're going to look psychologically at my choice of chocolate, first of all, it tastes delicious. So that's a very important part. But also having different flavors in there. It's kind of like I always sort of explain my life as being a bit similar to how I used to be in the labs in university when we were actually creating medicines. And that's kind of how life is. It's like when you're making a chocolate bar or a medicine and you've got all the different ingredients and there's like a perfect ratio. And that particular one chocolate for me is the perfect ratio. And that's what I aim to do every day, is experiment with different ingredients in my life to find something that tastes as delicious and makes my life feel as delicious as that chocolate.
Okay. Now, as I'm Swiss, right? And I love the normal milk chocolate, but for the last 2 or 3 years, I'm like the 85-90% dark chocolate. So what is dark
hardcore
chocolate for you?
Wow.
That's not hardcore.
Oh my God, no.
99% is hardcore.
I have to admit, I'm a rookie dark chocolate lover. I'm 70-80%. Any more than that, and I think it starts to taste a bit like soil. But I'm glad you're enjoying it because I think it's a lot healthier for you when it has slightly less milk content. So keep going with that dark chocolate. I will try and follow suit and gradually reduce mine.
I found out, now it's not to make commercial, but Lindt chocolate for me so far is the one I know I like at the 85-90%. And
I'm with you on that. Other chocolates are available, but that is the one of the best, I have to admit.
Yes, because I'm trying this and that. And it's also because Lindt is really good in holding the sugar ratio at like 10%, 10-11, yeah. I think, at the 90. The 99% is like 1% sugar or something, but it's really hard. I mean, there you don't eat more than like a corner. But let's go back to my standard question, and now let's see how you answered that one, knowing what you said here for chocolate. You are a new color in a crayon box. Yeah. What color would you be and why? Let's see how that will come.
Oh, that's a difficult one for me. I'm very indecisive when it comes to colors because my mood tends to change and I tend to be attracted very much to different things. If you'd asked me a few years ago, I probably would have said black. Because there's something quite impactful with black, but I know energetically it can be quite a heavy color. So I'm actually trying to train myself into embracing slightly brighter colors. So my current answer and what the color I'm currently would be is probably yellow. And this ties back to, I think a few of my friends have always called me sort of happiness queen or princess of sunrise or something to do with bright sun and light, because when I'm in my peak state, that's how I feel. I feel like a beam of sunshine, and I really feel like a lot of our energy can be influenced by things like what color crayon we are, what colors we wear. Everything around us has an influence on how we feel, so things like wearing a bright color yellow actually I think can really help boost your mood. So I would say if I was going to do my colouring, it would be yellow, probably with an outline of black, just because I've still got that little bit of my core.
Okay. Now, yellow is my color for the last 6-7 months as well.
Oh, fantastic.
So I cannot resist. And I paint, or I did 1 year school of art. So what kind of yellow? Because I realized for me, it really depends what kind of yellow it is that I feel comfortable with it or not. So in which ratio are you? Are you going more like to this lemonish yellow, or this like really, what is it, pastel, or the more getting to the orange warm yellow?
It is the bright, almost, it's not so much green, it's just a vibrant yellow. So it's not the deep sort of mustard color, and it's not the limey highlighter, but the most sort of bright, bouncy yellow that you would see on a tropical Hawaiian shirt.
Okay, and how have I enjoyed? Okay, I have to see.
I'll send you a picture of the yellow.
You send a pic, then I take that one. Make a Photoshop of your pic, your face with the yellow in the back, so we
Sounds
have it.
Good.
Okay, so I love your answer so far. Now let's see more. During our retreat in Samotiva, we were talking about, you know, different secrets, like what is true, what is not. I have a similar one. If you're up to it, of course. It's like a secret you have, like, you know, now you told us about the chocolate, but perhaps you have something else people don't really know about you. I mean, I hope your parents or close friends know, but something, you know, loving cats and have all kind of underpants with cats on it or something.
Okay. Oh, my deepest, darkest, maybe not deepest, darkest secrets, but I could give you a good secret. Okay, I would say something not a lot of people know about me is that when I get scared, my feet hurt.
Okay.
So if someone jumps out on me, I get electric shocks through the base of my feet. It's something no podiatrist or medical person has been able to explain. That's my strange, wonderful fact that not many people would know, but now probably more will.
Okay, I didn't know.
And if someone else has that, please let me know, because I've never met another person who gets this feeling. It's not great.
Yeah, I mean, you started mentioning that you're very spiritual, and I mean, let's go. How is this? How did you get here? You talked a lot when we met personally, and you talked to the group. We were about your upbringing, that you're in Wales. When you look at the picture, you can see you're Indian, but your mom is, you say, fairy blonde, or how you call that?
Yeah, she's
very white.
She's Irish and Welsh. So she's Irish, very fair.
Fair, yes. Yeah, fair. Very, yeah. Very light color. And your father is Indian. And
yes.
You didn't live all your life in Wales, or wherever, in the mountains where you are now. So
no.
You lived in India, and how did that experience shape your life?
So I've grown up living out in the mountains in Wales. So the house that I'm sitting in right now talking to you from is the house I was born in. So I was born and raised out here in the mountains and homeschooled till I was about 11. So we spent a lot of my childhood, I traveled a fair amount with my dad, which he was doing for work anyway. So we spent some time over in India, less so sort of when I started school after about age 12. But I spent a lot of time sort of on the move. And after I finished school and I went to university, the last 10 years I've spent sort of, I am a little bit of a constant mover. So I've lived in about 6 different cities or so within a few years. So mostly around the UK, I was moving around a lot, but then trying to get as much traveling done as possible in between. And I definitely say growing up with less of what I would say is the standard surroundings and being very much exposed to really unusual cultures, I think that just made me see normal as something probably quite different to other people. And it gave me a very open-minded view of life, and I think I've always been very sort of open-hearted, really accepting, and very able to adapt really to my surroundings, because I was constantly in new places, experiencing new cultures, surrounded by new people. And so it became very normal for me to be able to adapt it to the surroundings I was in. And now I'd go as far as to say it, I actually flourish now with those sort of changes. But the one thing I would say is, because I've spent so much of my life moving, I'm really having to focus on the stability aspects of my life. So I'm trying to create more of a routine and a structure, and maybe a little bit less movement, because I've done so much that sometimes it's been a little bit too much and the body can't quite keep up with where my mind wants to go. So it's definitely, I think it's definitely been a gift, and I'm so grateful for my parents and the beautiful world they showed me really from such a young age. And now as a, I'm supposed to say adult, I'm technically an adult. I'm still not sure I feel like one, but technically as an adult, I am now finding my own way to balance the joy of fluid movement across the globe, which has been absolutely put to a halt now, but falling in love with stability, falling in love with being in one place. And that for me is a bit of a challenge at times, but I'm definitely learning to appreciate what's in front of me.
Wow. I have heard that before, that people as a young age traveling a lot were more adaptive later on in to changes and innovation, and if it's at workspace or cultural changes. So your father and your mom, they met, as I remember, because he's a yoga was a yoga teacher, or what was he doing exactly?
So he was, he was studying his PhD and he was teaching yoga.
Yes. And you grew up doing yoga since you could crawl on the floor, or?
I think it was before. There's photos of my mum doing yoga while I'm still in her belly. So I think technically I started participating in yoga pre sort of birth.
Okay. So you did, but you did it all your life. Like, you did meditations and all these fancy moves.
I mean, yoga's been very much part of my life in a way that it wasn't so much just a separate practice, but I grew up with everyone around me doing yoga. It was very, very normal for that sort of, to be the day to day. And my mum was fantastic in, you know, doing yoga with me and my brothers. And then when I was 15, I did a 2-year teacher training course in Manchester with Drew, which is the company my dad founded many years ago. And I qualified as a yoga teacher, and for about 10 years on and off I've been teaching yoga, whether that's as part of the Drew Yoga Online Studio. I had regular classes for students when I was studying and ran the yoga society, and then I started to do my own forms of yoga working with personal clients. And yeah, it's definitely changed very much from when I first started. But it's also been a really lovely common thread, and one of the great things in my toolbox really that I can use when I'm feeling a little bit overwhelmed, or if I'm feeling like there's a lot going on in my life. It's a nice way to find my core and my soul again, really, and reconnect. So yeah, very much, very grateful actually to have that. And I'm really happy to be in a world where yoga is becoming a lot more normal now. When I was young, it really wasn't. Like, it was almost unheard of to be doing yoga. So I'm like happy to see that there's this great movement now across the world of new yogis springing up left, right and center. So I think it will help a lot of people.
Okay, so you say when you were young, it was almost unheard. No, let me go another way. You had people doing yoga around you. Did you just join them, or did your parents kind of encourage?
It's always been very relaxed in my family. I've never been pushed into anything really, which is why I think I do love spirituality and yoga so much, because it was never forced upon me. It was just there as an offering. And I was like, yeah, it looks great. So I want to pursue it for myself. And I think, you know, in terms of how they sort of managed it, I think that they did a great job on the parenting front, because they were very relaxed about it. It was a case of, it was there for me to use if I so wished. But also, there were times in my life where I didn't practice at all. There were times I didn't teach because I was exploring other parts of my personality. There were other things that were a bigger focus for me. but in time, I mean, I've just, before this call, I've just finished my yoga practice, maybe set the fire alarms off and got so many candles burning in my room and had incense and like my lovely mantra music on. And like 5 years ago, I was definitely not doing that on a regular basis. But the great thing is, because I know it's there, it's always an option for me to come back to. And often in times like this, with everything that's going on with COVID-19, it's an absolute godsend, because it just absolutely transforms all those feelings of fear, the feelings of feeling out of control. It just allows all of that to dissipate and regain that feeling of peace inside, which is very hard to come by sometimes.
Yeah, I can see. So for you, it's just, yeah, it's hard to find a comparison. I wanted to say, for other people, say it's the chocolate is the comforting default yeah. when we are stressed. But I was kind of until now waiting for mentioning that. But if you grew up with it, then you know, okay, if I do that, my body likes it, my spirit likes it, it calms me.
Yeah.
For others, because at 2 years old, they get chocolate. Okay, I'm going to be happy when I get chocolate. So I think the yoga is probably the better practice.
I'd say a good combination of the two. But I do think, like, oh, there's a big thing now with self-care as well, which is, again, fantastic, because mental health is really becoming a predominant force. But it's good time now, where everyone's locked inside, to start experimenting with which self-care practices that work for people. So I've got like an array of about 10 different things that I can try, that I know how each of them works for me. So if I'm feeling a certain way, I know which one I can reach for, whether it's running a bath with essential oils, bubble bath, whether it's reading a certain book, sometimes it's going for a walk in the mountains, sometimes it's painting, sometimes it's doing yoga, sometimes it's going for a jog. There's so many different things we can do. And what works for me might not work for you. And that's brilliant. So I think it's a great opportunity now, while everyone's stuck in one place, try different tools, see which ones work. And then when you come out of it, hopefully when we come out the other end of this, you've got yourself your little list that you refer to when you're having times where you're struggling. And you already know how each of them affect you, so you know what to reach for. And similar to how yoga's become that for me, it's not always the right thing for me to do. Sometimes I don't feel like doing yoga. Sometimes I just want to read. Sometimes I want to do a really heavy HIIT workout. But I know how each of those things now affects me, and I know what my body needs at different times. And I think that'll be a really lovely thing for people to bring out of this, is their toolkit.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, I know. I do try so many things, and sometimes I don't really know what to do when. I just know with the workouts. But
yeah.
You're definitely there. I mean, there's so many, for the people which listen to that, it's, what is it, the 2nd of April, 2020.
Yes.
So we're in the middle of the coronavirus, in case this is someone listening to us a few years ahead and doesn't remember. So we're all locked yeah. home and... Yeah, in my case, we are home for 22 days with my wife and the two kids. It's really what we hear around is really a lot of people talking about the spiritual growth we have to go through, because we are so used to our daily work that exactly what you mentioned here brings to the thought, like, these different toolkits we have. Not everyone can go walk in the mountains, unfortunately, now, but we have these other things, yoga, stretching, bath, shower. Essential oils is also something which is more new for many people. We have them for 2 years at least. 2.5 years we use a lot. Reading, painting. Yeah. Most people are probably going on YouTube or Netflix at the moment.
Yes. I have to admit, it's very tempting. And this applies, especially if these people are listening to this after Corona and after everyone's free again. This can also apply to things like weekends, days off, when you've got time, obviously. But I found when everything first started, my sort of brain part of me was telling me, oh, you can just watch Netflix, you can chill, you can just have, you know, put YouTube videos on. There's loads of films you're wanting to watch. But I found that after I had one night where I had a proper Netflix binge and I felt awful the next day. I almost felt like I had a Netflix hangover. So I would say it's actually really tempting to just binge on Netflix, but try also to do something that's creative that doesn't involve a screen, something that even reading a book that's not on a tablet, something like painting or playing an instrument badly if you want, cooking, doing something that's a bit hands-on can be really helpful, because having too much screen time is also not great for your mental health for too long. Now is obviously an interesting time and it is a lovely time to watch films that you've been wanting to see for ages. Try and think about what you're feeding your mind. There's a lot of panic, a lot of stress, a lot of worry in all of our lives.
So we are back after some internet hiccups. And Radha was talking about less screen time would be healthy because you were doing an over binging in the first few days of too many movies and felt bad, hangover kind
totally,
of.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, so I think it's a lot of online services are popping up and there is a serious oversubscription to online. But this is my own personal experience and everyone experiences it differently. But in general, having too much screen time and binge watching lots of programs isn't the healthiest. But it's also nice to have time to watch films you've been wanting to watch. It's nice to catch up on the series you've been missing. So it is a time to be able to do the things you enjoy. But the biggest thing that I found is, you know, at the moment, a lot of our choices are taken away from us. So one of the few choices we have is, what do we consume? What are the things that we're putting into our minds, our bodies? What are we actually choosing to watch? So the only adaptation I'd make is if you do want to watch a movie, a TV series, watch your favorite ones, but try and make at least the majority of what you're watching something that's uplifting, something that teaches you something, something that restores your faith in humanity, not something that leaves you with more fear, more anxiety, increases the stress levels even more than they already are. I mean, we have enough on the media to scare us. We don't need to watch horror films. So I would say, obviously, watch what you love. And this, I'm talking to myself as much as all of you, because we all have a tendency to, you know, when we've got time at home, to maybe watch a little bit more TV than normal. So are there ways you can be creative with your time? And for me personally, I've had to really put time limits on what I can watch and how long I can watch for, so that I enjoy it, but I also know that what I'm feeding my mind, just like what you feed your body, is good stuff and is going to leave you feeling better than when you started.
Okay, so how do you do that? Do you have a program on the computer or phone which is kind of saying, okay, enough screen time, and it turns off, or you basically have an alarm clock?
I basically, you know, if I'm watching one or maybe two episodes of something, depending on how long they are, I know that is my limit. The way that I'm still sort of in uncharted territory, as much as all of us here, in terms of figuring out how best to do this whole lockdown thing. And for me, journaling every single day has been a lifesaver, because each day I'm saying, okay, what worked for me in the last 24 hours? What didn't? What made me feel good? What made me feel awful? What are the adaptations I can make for tomorrow? Because it's only through assessing what we've done. If you feel bad, that's fine. We're human beings. We're meant to feel the full spectrum of emotions. But a bad feeling, feeling sad or anxious or stress, often is your body's symptom telling you that something's not sitting right. So when you're feeling anxious, when you feel stressed, when you feel down, maybe have a look at, okay, what's triggering it? Is there something I can do that is within my sphere of influence to change it? So I'm writing in my journal, these are the lessons that I've learned from the 24 hours. These are the things I really want to do more of. These are the things I want to do less of. We're not going to be perfect. It's not going to be a perfect plan, but it can be a better day tomorrow than it was in the last 24 hours. Or we can go into that day feeling more prepared. We can go into that day having learned the lessons from yesterday. And that way, this very strange sort of bubble that we're creating can really actually accelerate our growth faster than probably we would if we were getting up and going to work every single day. So I'm doing this more so on the days that I'm not working in the pharmacy, because I'm still working as a pharmacist pretty much most of the time, but I've taken a few days now just to get my energy back together because it's been really draining. And I've really made sure that instead of sleeping in late or eating trashy food, I've been getting out for long walks in the mountains because I'm so fortunate to live here. And I've been reading really beautiful books that completely educate, inspire, uplift me. I've been making sure my yoga and my fitness is my priority so that now when I go back to work, instead of just feeling like I've spent 3 days watching TV and eating pizza, I'm going back to it with more energy. So it's just a case of actually sort of having time to examine your life, not being scared to do that. And again, not judging what's right and what's wrong. It's nothing's right and wrong. It's just a case of, can you improve? And that's all it is. It's non-judgmental assessment, but still being proactive.
Wow. Yeah, you come with a lot of good advices. So I definitely started journaling a long time ago, but this makes it a bit easier because I stopped in between. I tried to do dream journaling. But,
okay.
I feel a bit, because I wake up at night and then don't want to turn on the light, and I'm afraid if I turn on the phone, then I won't sleep anymore. I don't want
to. Yeah.
So sometimes I remember like the dream I talked about before the record. So now we have been basically introducing yourself, who you are. For my podcast, I ask a lot about creativity and innovation. So let's see. You mentioned a lot of creative things you do. So I'm sure you have some answers there. How would you define creativity for yourself? I mean, what is your feeling about it?
For me, creativity is space. So I've found that my creativity is stunted if I am too busy. So my creativity flourishes when I have time to go and sit in nature, no music, nothing around me, and just listen to the birds or the river or sit in the sun or listen to the sound of the rain, because in Wales we have a lot of that as well. And actually meditating and switching off from the world, that is where I found a lot of creativity. And often we can think that to create a new idea, to make something new, to make it work, you have to be acting all the time, you have to be going, you have to be really chasing it. But actually there's a lot of beauty also to be found in the spaces between the movement. And it's like they say, there's so much power in the pause between each breath. And that is where a lot of the magic can happen. So I know for myself personally, and for a lot of people I know that are incredibly creative, that is where they can find new ideas, new ways of looking at things. And one of the key parts of creativity, I truly believe, lies in sleep. And it sounds totally counterintuitive, but if you allow yourself to educate yourself and learn and, yes, have some of that activity during the day, during the night, there's some magic that happens where the neural connections are sort of built together and bits of knowledge from your past, your present, your future are all woven together to create new ideas, new ways of looking at things, new ways of mixing together all of the data that you have into something that is different. And perhaps like a new relationship between different parts of your world you didn't think were there, whether that's innovation, whether that's practical creativity like painting, music, lyrics. A lot of that beauty can really come through if you give yourself time to rest. And so yeah, it's probably the opposite of what a lot of people would look at in terms of creativity, but I think there's a lot to be said for less.
Okay, no, but it makes sense. A lot of things I was reading myself. So you mentioned or when you do meditate, or when you have no music, you just are yourself. And then you also talk about the sleep. So where do you think those ideas come from? Are they just popping up in your head, or you have something in your head when, and then you continue with that thought or that problem?
I definitely think you need a little bit of guidance, which is why what I said about in terms of what you choose to consume in the day, I think that has a huge amount to contribute in terms of what thoughts and ideas come up. And in Ayurveda, in the nutrition and sort of medical school from the East, we really look at the fact that the quality of what you eat and what you drink, what you listen to, what you watch, everything, it changes the quality of your thoughts. So if you want to have high quality thoughts, you need to give your body high quality fuel. So everything from the vitality of the food that you're eating, the amount of stress that you're putting yourself under, whether that's mentally, whether that's physically. I think really looking at how are you feeding what will be creating your thoughts. And then in terms of things like simple activities, and some people it really doesn't work for them, but for me, I find it massively beneficial. Things like gratitude journals, things like vision boards. I really find feeding my subconscious and making myself focus on what is good and what is possible and what I want to create, that allows then when I'm in those moments of peace and tranquility, then it allows the right things to come in. So when I read, I really try and read things that are going to help shape my thoughts. So I kind of feel like the activity that you partake in during the day is setting your trajectory for how your thoughts and how your creativity will be expressed afterwards. So how can you help start in the right direction by really focusing on the things that are going to get you where you want to go? We as human beings have a negativity bias. We are automatically drawn towards finding the negatives because from our ancestors, it helped us survive. Being worried about things was important because it meant that we could then find solutions for how to find food and shelter. But now this negativity bias is working against us because we're focusing on the negatives and what is actually a very positive life. But it requires active daily effort, really, to try and rewire our brains and create new circuits that are focused on finding the positive side of things, on finding where we can find opportunity, not a roadblock. And that does take effort, especially for many of us who have been wrapped in the quite addictive nature of complaining, of what's wrong, of bad news. So we have to work hard to rewire our brains and strengthen the circuits in our brain that will give us the opportunity to express creativity and find the gift in even the hardest of situations.
Okay, so basically it's lifestyle.
Pretty much.
Wow. Yeah, I don't really know how to put the questions around all this information you have. If someone would, you know, now you explained what creativity is for you, right? So, and if I want to be creative as a person, I'm listening to it and I say, I'm not creative. Okay, perhaps I eat the wrong food. I eat pizza and frozen stuff all the time. I sleep at 12 and then at 10 and then at 2 o'clock. So I'm not sleeping good enough. So, I mean, there's a few things you can start doing there. But else, if you sit down and say, okay, I meditate, I'm in nature because I have the possibility and I would like to be creative. Is there something else you could help, or is it just basically sit down and just enjoy the moment?
I think there is a balance to be struck between, you can't just sit and wait all the time for brilliance to strike. You do have to also take action. There is a careful balance. I mentioned the stopping and sitting quietly because it's the part that most people forget. But I would say on the active part, in terms of what you can do proactively, try new things. Maybe you think, I'm not a painter. Maybe you think, I'm not a poet. Maybe you think, I'm not a musician. I can't speak any other languages. Just try and do something out of your comfort zone. Be willing to be rubbish at it. I'm awful with certain creative things that I try and do. My first painting, I nearly burnt. They were so embarrassingly bad. But it's actually a really good way of pushing yourself out of pursuing the goal and into just expressing creativity. And the longer you pursue it, sometimes, yes, okay, you might have decided to do your first oil painting or take up knitting, whatever it is. But just the action of actually pushing your mind into a slightly more creative space where it's having to do something it might be a little bit uncomfortable with, it might be pretty terrible at, but that actually is really important for us because it's like stretching muscle. You can only get stronger and better by expressing it. And it might not mean that you become the next Picasso, but it might be that the creativity that you're pushing yourself in that way might bring about greater creativity in your job, possibly as a lawyer or as a banker or as an architect or whatever you're doing in the office on a day-to-day basis, but just allowing your brain to have that respite and to stretch different parts of you that you're not familiar with. I think it's just a good habit for all of us to learn to not be amazing at everything all the time. It's one that I'm not great at because I want to be there already. I want to be perfect in every activity that I do. But if you hear me play guitar, you know that that is a long way away. I am definitely still on the very much the learning path. But the important part of it is just try something that you've not done before. Whether it is going on YouTube and what I was starting to do a few weeks ago, which was learn how to draw watercolor flowers, something simple, something therapeutic, something different. You don't have to be good at it. You just have to be willing to be bad at it for long enough.
Okay, very good. I completely agree with that. I'm doing so many things and I'm cross-pollinating everything. I want to be perfect, so I get really pissed if it's not good.
I feel you, totally.
But I know it's like, why do you get pissed? You know exactly, you have to put in the hours and the tries. And but I started a year ago an oil painting after 8 or 10 years of, no, must have been 10 or 11 years of not painting with oil. And it was a big thing. I did it, and the more I did, I got more and more tired. Whenever I thought of doing it, I had no energy. So it ended up not doing anything. And then I basically ripped it in pieces because I didn't continue. So now I started an acrylic version of it, which I guess I think it's more a mental issue, because when you think of oil, you think it has to be perfect because it's oil, it's kind of precious and it's beautiful and whatever not. And acrylic is just acrylic, but also there you can get good and bad colors, right? As well for oil colors. So let's see if I'm gonna finish that version on acrylic faster, because we have so much.
I'm sure it will be great. And even if it's not, I think you should hang it on the wall.
I'm good in drawing, so don't worry.
I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I can send you some pictures of our stones.
Definitely.
Perhaps that helps, because we were doing a lot of stone paintings lately. There's enough stones, you know, activity for what you said. We went down the beach and we come home with bags full of round stones to paint.
Sounds good.
So much for meditation, but why not?
That can be a form of meditation.
Yeah, because we have two small kids, so we somehow want to activate them.
Totally, that's fantastic.
Yes, so we talked about that one. When did you have to get out of your comfort zone the last time? You already touched on it now with your active part of creativity.
The last time that I got out my comfort zone. Ooh.
And what did you do to actually get out of it or overcome it?
So I think, I think probably the latest thing that pushed me a little bit was when I was last walking in the mountains. So I am someone who's always been very much, I've always been in love with the gym, and I've very much enjoyed like HIIT workouts, very strong strength workouts, resistance training, all your spin classes, so all the really high intensity, loud music, very full on. And for me, something like walking in the mountains was actually quite difficult, even though I was brought up in the mountains. Going for a long walk without a purpose for me felt very counterproductive. So it's one of the things that I've actually started to do to try. For me, doing less is really difficult. So I am really trying to make myself go walking more and more often now in the mountains. And I think it was about 3 days ago, I did a walk just behind my house, absolutely freezing cold, because I definitely did not dress appropriately for the mountain. I did not bring gloves. It was sunny when I started. It was not sunny when I came down. And I mean, there was many points where I could have complained. I could have said, oh, I really want to go home, get warm. But actually, I made myself stay longer and walk a little further. And it was the best thing I could do, because But the sunset, even though it was freezing cold, was the most beautiful sunset I've ever seen in my life. And as I sat there, slightly shivering, I found something really beautiful beyond the physical discomfort that I was experiencing. And I wouldn't have got that view if I hadn't pushed myself a little bit more. And yeah, it really reminded me of why sometimes the goal isn't important, it's the process. And that's something that I know mentally, but don't always know deeply to my core. Because you can understand something, but it doesn't mean you fully believe it. So I know that I should focus on the process. And now I've started to more and more in the last couple of weeks, really, fall in love with each step as I walk. I take my shoes off, feel my feet on the ground. I feel the sun or the rain sprinkling on my skin. And I savor that moment rather than thinking, okay, hour and a half, got to get here to this point, then back. Then I'm going to do my work. I stop trying to focus on an end goal and enjoy each step as it comes. And that for me is massively out of my comfort zone because I'm so goal orientated. So it's kind of falling in love with the moments has been my latest challenge.
Okay. And now, and that comes from someone which grew up with yoga and Ayurveda. So it feels like the people I've talked to doing that, it's kind of, that's the part of you know, being a yoga to love the moment. Have you always been goal oriented and you went for the goals? Is that something for the last 10 years or in your grown up life?
No, I remember as a child being very similar to how you are with your paintings and how I am now, which is I hated imperfection. I would rip them up, tear them to pieces. And actually up until the last sort of, I'd say probably the last 4 months, I've done yoga and I've really enjoyed it, but I very much set a time limit as well. So I have an hour where I'm very present, I'm in that moment, and then I know I've got everything that I need to do after that. I've always been someone who meditates, I've always been someone that sits and does sort of visualizations and things like that, but it's never been a total surrender. And that's something I didn't realize, whereas walking up in the mountains, it's kind of endless if you choose it to be. So going a little bit longer and further without knowing technically where the end point is, or giving yourself a time limit or setting sort of restrictions and a goal around it, that's been a lot more challenging than saying, okay, I've got a yoga class for an hour, or I'm going to meditate for 20 minutes, put my timer on, I know exactly what I'm doing. There's still some structure to that. So I think the goal orientated part of me has always been there, and it's not part of me I want to lose, because I actually think it's a really useful skill, but it's something that I need to make sure I'm controlling instead of it controlling me, because that way I can savor the experience. And it means that nothing's ever a failure, because even when you start a project and you give your all to it and it doesn't work, okay, you might not get the outcome you wanted, but you've become a better person for having tried. And well, you hopefully will have become a better person for having tried. And that's why I think that things like starting a business venture or startups, it can be a lot of pressure to put on yourself, but as long as you know that you're going to come out of the other end, whether or not it's exactly how you pictured it, as long as the person you've become in the process of pursuing that goal is better, it's not time wasted. So it's more about, for me, switching my goal is no longer that end point. What I know will happen is I'm going to change in the pursuit of this goal. So my goal now instead is, who am I going to become? Am I going to like who I'm going to become at the end of this? When I reach that goal, the goal will be done and it'll be passed in a heartbeat, like my graduation day, a few hours and, you know, 4 years is gone. And then you move on to the next day and the next goal. And although, you know, I've got a piece of paper now with some words on it and a number, that isn't really what I carry with me. What I carry with me is, who did I become in the process of that education? And that, I think, is the treasure for all of us.
Wow. You make me think a lot here. But it's very true. It's very true. let's enjoy the moment, enjoy the process, and who you are afterwards. I've always had a hard time with being defined by, you know, the titles I have.
Mm.
I've also mentioned in the podcast one or several times that the last internship I had, there were some people coming to me like, what are you doing here? Are you not the quality guy? I'm like, no, it was just a job. It's just what was on my payroll, but that's not me, right? So
totally, yeah.
I think that's nicely around here. So how do you see when people around you, I don't know, your coaching and all that stuff, but I've seen with people around when you work on creativity, they have certain feelings and obstacles. What is the biggest obstacle you see with them that they take on their creative side, that they accept that they're creative? What do you think is the biggest reason for people to feel I'm not creative?
To be honest, I think a lot of people, myself included, have always said I'm not creative. And that's because we have a very limited view of what creativity is. I naturally have never really been able to play a musical instrument. I wasn't the world's best artist. And I don't feel like I have a massively creative spark. But that's because I am listening to a certain definition of what creativity is. And my benchmark is the famous artists and writers and songwriters of our time. But actually, I think the reason a lot of people get stuck, and also from my own personal experience, the reasons I often felt stuck was because I was using someone else as a comparison. And I think people are really important to help us model. When you look at someone who you idolize, you can model their techniques and their tools to really help you structure your life. But also it's important not to get too tied into it. And also it's kind of okay to accept that some people aren't creative in the normal sense. You might be someone who is more of a rational thinker. You might be someone who is better at acting out other people's ideas. It's an expression of the best of who you are. Not everyone has to be the world's best fashion designer. Not everyone has to be a fantastic world-class Michelin star chef. That's okay. We all have our gifts to give. It might be that you are that amazing person in the office that everyone knows they can come and talk to and that will be there to support them. It might be that you're a tech wizard and that coding and maybe not as much communication with other people, that is your thing. That's okay. And there's been a lot more come out recently about the power of introversion and about the fact that being the extrovert, being the one that is known as the star on the stage, that isn't for everyone and nor should it be. But it's really important to understand that your gift and what you're here to give, that is an expression of your creativity, because you're using all your skills and being creative in terms of how can I best give everything that I have to help the most people. And simple questions like looking at what are the skills that come naturally to you, where are the places you feel energized. So when you spoke about the painting and you said you, whenever you did the painting, you felt less energy, that's a sign or a symptom possibly that maybe that isn't the right route of creativity for you. So it is, life's an experiment. You test and try and experience things. Some things will work, some things won't. But along the way, you work, where are the things where you feel energized? And often that can be a good indicator of where we should put more energy. Because I personally believe that our purpose and all of those things that we talk about, you know, find your dream, your passion, your purpose, all of that, often what energizes you can be a really, really great sign saying, yes, this is a good path for you to pursue. So there's a lot of different factors to look at, a huge amount. It's not black and white. Nothing is in life. But I think the underlying thing is don't try and stick yourself in a box created by a societal image of, like you said, a title in a job. That's not who you are. You are you. You're an individual. No one in the world is the same. There may be hundreds of thousands of people with the same job title. Doesn't mean you're the same person, doesn't mean you have the same skill set. So look creatively at what you've been given. No matter what job you're in, you don't have to quit and change jobs sometimes to find your passion, but you can rediscover your passion and creativity by looking at the opportunities to express your gifts where you are. Or it might be a case of starting a new project, or it might be a case of how can you be more in terms of what you're offering to your family and be that pin that holds it all together. And something simple but powerful as the mother of a family and the food that she gives her family, to be able to bring them together at a mealtime and inspire creativity, love, nourish them deeply to their cells so that they can go out and be the best they are. So I think creativity comes from, like I said, those still points. Look at your gifts and find how you can shine the best you can in the world that we're in.
Wow. I'm seldomly so speechless. Wow. Very deep. So, due to the respect of your time, let's kind of close it in. Do you have any call for action for our listeners to be more creative, to get out of their comfort zone or learn something?
Definitely. I would say, I'm going to say instead of one call to action, I'm going to give two, because one of them may not be possible for everyone. The first one is, and it's just because of everything that's happening in the world at the moment, would be go out in nature on a regular basis. I think it's really important. It helps everything from your gut microbiome to your mental health, your levels of stress, blood pressure. There is too many benefits scientifically and spiritually to being in nature for you not to have it as part of your plan. If you can't do it now while everything's going on, make it part of your plan of what to do after everything has calmed a little, because I think that is somewhere where creativity will blossom, but also you are really, you're nourishing the roots of who you are, you're grounding yourself, but you're also opening yourself up to the elements, and it gets you out of the little boxes that we often put ourselves in called houses, and gives yourself a bit of time, even if it's standing outside in the garden for 10 minutes under the sky and just being sort of in that limitless space. And then the second thing that I would say, because I know not everyone can get outside, it's not always that easy if you live in an apartment building, if you live in a very built up area, is try and find some way of deeply connecting to yourself on a daily basis. So carving out, whether that be 5 minutes before the kids wake up, whether it be 10 minutes once they've gone to sleep at night, time, not even with the partner or with your family, but just with yourself, and making a daily appointment to get to know who you are. And that time can be doing something like, I don't know, mindfulness coloring. It can be meditation. It can be painting. It can be sketching. It can be singing. It can be, you know, doing some gentle stretches or sitting in the bath or staring at the stars, whatever it is, but just some time for you, and making that daily appointment so that you're not living for everyone else, but at least for a few minutes each day, you get in touch with who you are, with what your deepest soul desires are, with what connects us to everything that is, and just reset your perspective and remember that everything is okay. And yeah, find the ray of sunshine in your life.
Beautiful. I cannot add more to that. I was just turning my head away from the computer screen and saw that the rain and gray clouds have passed and the sunshine is here. It was a short moment of no wind, but that just caught up again. But else, it's almost blue sky, and actually the sky is bluer thanks to almost non-airplane that flies around the globe.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. We definitely, that's one part, going out to nature as much as possible. But again, with a 6-year and a nine-year-old, it's sometimes a bit difficult. Especially,
of course, yeah.
But it is, we know of the power. So if you're alone and you have the possibilities, I totally agree. go out. Yeah. We always have excuses. I know how it is. Just turn on the TV, take on the smartphone, do something there. But we feel better when we're outside. So
totally.
Now, you mentioned in the beginning that you love to learn and you read a lot of books. I guess you're a speed reader. So do you have any any books coming to your mind that you would like to recommend or you normally recommend to your friends and people around?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the one that I've just finished, which was absolutely mind-blowing, is We Are the Weather. It's an interesting look at climate change and everything that's going on with the environment at the moment. But the way that he writes it has this depth of philosophy and storytelling that is exquisite. Would highly, highly recommend that one. Okay. And then I'm trying to think of what other books have really spoken to me recently. I would say probably a book on nutrition. I'm reading Patrick Holford's Optimum Nutrition Bible. There are many books out on healthy foods and healthy habits, but finding a like whatever cuisine that is your thing, whether you're vegetarian, vegan, if you're an omnivore, pescatarian, God, there's so many different tarians now. But finding a way to educate yourself about what you're putting in your body, because what we eat is a practice we all partake in pretty much 3 to 6 times a day, some more, some less. If you can make a difference in what you're choosing there, then I would say that will transform your life for sure. So whatever nutrition book it is for you, for me, I'm learning about Ayurvedic cooking at the moment and learning about herbs, and I find that really fascinating. But whether it's a really lovely cookbook that has healthy, wholesome recipes, or something that teaches you about the power of phytonutrients in your plants, just something that teaches you about what you're putting in your body and gives you that way to make an educated choice about your health, I think is absolute must have.
I put some links to the two books you mentioned.
Fantastic.
In the show notes. And how can people reach you if they want to hear more about you? Other podcasts or YouTubes or
So website? my website is togaonline.co.uk. So TOGA online, which is toning yoga, in which I sort of incorporate some of the nutrition, lifestyle, holistic fitness, all of the things that I know and love. And then on social media at Toga Online as well. And that's on Instagram and on Facebook.
Super. Then thank you very much for this very deep.
Thank you so much. A bit technically
challenging.
That's the joy of living in the mountains, I'm afraid. We do not get great internet.
Yeah, but so you're less... You're less exposed to all this radiation.
That's true.
And again, thank you very much. And it was such a pleasure talking to you for the podcast.
So lovely to speak to you. And I'm wishing you and all of your family absolute peace, health, happiness through all of this.
Okay. You too, of course. And to the listeners, thank you for today and see you for another episode. Bye-bye.